now stay tuned for Straight Talk, the show where social justice meets criminal law. Brought to you on WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, by Tucker Griffin Barnes. Now here's your host, Andre Higgs.
Good morning, Charlottesville. You are listening to Straight Talk on WPVC-FM, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Straight Talk is a series of interviews and conversations about legal and social justice issues affecting our community. I am your host, Andre Hakes. On today's show, we will be talking with Terry Cooper of One Virginia. Welcome, Terry.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for being here this morning, Terry. Tell me a little bit about what One Virginia does in a nutshell.
We are seeking a constitutional amendment to amend the Virginia Constitution.
Yes, sir.
So as to end the practice of gerrymandering.
Now, I always thought it was gerrymandering, but I have been reeducated this morning. Tell me about gerrymandering.
Well, the name gerrymandering is a mashup of Gary, named after the then governor of Massachusetts, Elbridge Gary, and Mander, short for salamander, which is what a Boston Gazette cartoonist said that a district that Gary signed into law looked like.
Now, when we start talking about Gary, how long ago was Gary in office?
That was 1812.
Well, so gerrymandering's been with us for a while then.
It's been with us a lot longer than that.
And what is the purpose of a gerrymander?
It is to advantage the majority party in the legislative body that does the redistricting.
Okay. And it in effect protects an incumbent, yes?
Well, it protects the majority party.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's an incumbent or an open seat or whatever, the notion is to keep them in the majority because they recognize that the minority party has virtually no power.
So what we're talking about here is drawing districts. And when you talk about a district, we're talking about a group of people whose votes are counted together, lumped together, for purposes of an election.
Yes.
So, for example, we are in the 5th district here.
5th congressional district, yes.
Tell me about the 5th district. What's it look like?
It goes from the North Carolina line into Fauquier County.
Is it a nice square?
It's not really anything.
What? Does it look like a salamander?
No, but we have districts that do.
So who's our 5th district candidate?
The candidates for this fall, the Democrat is Jane Dittmar, mm-hmm. who was recently a member of the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors.
I know Jane.
And the Republican is State Senator Tom Garrett of Buckingham County.
And I know Tom. So tell me a little bit about who's incumbent in that district right now.
Robert Hurt, Republican from Chatham.
And so Robert is not going to run again.
Correct.
For that seat. What's Robert going to do?
I don't know. I suspect he'll go back and practice law in Chatham.
Ah, I see. So Tom Garrett is the Republican candidate. Hurt is the one who has had the seat. Who's in the majority right now?
The Republicans.
So who drew the district?
Well, that's drawn by the state legislature.
All right. Well, tell me about that.
When it was last done in 2011 and 2012, initially in 2011, the Republicans controlled the House of Delegates, mm-hmm. and the Democrats controlled the state Senate.
Yes.
And they were able to agree on state legislative redistricting.
All
because
right.
they cut a bargain with the devil.
Right.
The Republicans in the House said, you let us, Mr. Democrats in the Senate, draw and gerrymander the House of Delegates lines, and
right.
we'll let you do the same in the Senate.
All right.
But they couldn't agree on Congress.
All right.
Now, in the interim, the Democrats really screwed up in their gerrymandering,
mm-hmm.
And they lost their majority. So in 2012...
What, did they gerrymander ineffectively?
Yes.
They made the wrong calls. They drew some lines that didn't protect them.
Yes, they had only a one-seat majority.
Now, how did that happen? I mean, how could somebody with the power to do that make the mistake of
messing
that up? Well,
I'll tell you about it.
Tell me.
They were really concerned about one of their number, Ed Houck, from the Fredericksburg area.
Right.
Because they knew that a then member of the Spotsylvania County Board of Supervisors, by the name of Bryce Reeves, was going to run against him.
Yes.
So they got out their pen and they determined that what they would do would be to draw Reeves out of that district. And they thought they had, but they got the wrong Reeves family.
Oh, no! So somebody looked at the records, the land records, and said, well, this is Reeves, and we're going to draw it so he's not within that district. And they finalized it all without realizing they had the wrong Reeves?
I guess so.
Are you serious?
This is the
running of the General Assembly. These are our legislators. How do you? Wow.
Well,
okay.
The legislators don't actually do it. It's done by consultants.
Oh, no. Even worse.
Yes.
These are the people the legislators hired to do it.
Exactly.
Bill
the taxpayers for doing that.
Oh, God. Well, I bet those folks did not get a Christmas bonus after that screw up. Wow. Okay. Well, so are you saying the state legislators hire consultants to draw the districts, including the federal congressional districts?
That's correct.
So how did we end up with the federal congressional district that we have right now?
Well, by the time that was done, the Republicans controlled both houses of the state legislature, so they were able to do it any way they wanted.
Now, I have to say, I mean, the Republicans have basically got the whip hand here in terms of the districts that currently exist. And you just walked into my studio with a proud Republican tote bag that says guns save lives on one hand. And here you are sitting here telling me about the evils of gerrymandering. What gives? I mean, doesn't it benefit your interests?
Well, I get accused of that. The notion from some people is that here in Virginia, because we did it, Republicans are the beneficiaries of gerrymandering. But my response is that the only beneficiaries of gerrymandering are the subpar legislators who couldn't win a competitive seat and hold office only because the gerrymanderers have packed their district with like-minded people.
So are you telling me you're an honest broker here? Is that what you're telling me? You want to do the right thing, even though it might adversely affect your political party?
I do, because I don't believe that being a partisan means that you have to put a thumb on the scale.
You want to win fairly.
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness. What a notion. So you are listening to Straight Talk on WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And my guest today is Terry Cooper of One Virginia. And we are talking about gerrymandering. So, Terry, I sort of see where you're coming from. Tell me a little bit about One Virginia. What is it? Is it One Virginia or One VA? How do you say the name?
One Virginia 2021.
All right. Tell me about One Virginia 2021.
Okay.
What is the organization and what's your role in it?
We are a statewide organization, but we are Virginia only. We don't mess around with other states. And we are composed of people from all walks of life, all parts of Virginia, all political persuasions. And we seek to end gerrymandering in Virginia.
Are there Democrats who are involved in One Virginia, just like in sort of the capacity that you are?
Absolutely.
And who are some of those Democrats who are involved?
Well, former delegates Shannon Valentine of Lynchburg, Linda Perriello, Tom Perriello's mother, huge number.
So Linda Perriello is working with you and other Republicans to try to accomplish the task.
Absolutely.
Wow. Wow. Bipartisanship. That's very rare.
Well, we all believe in it.
Well, y'all are crazy. No. Okay, so what's One Virginia's agenda right now? Tell me what the organization has been doing and kind of where they are right now.
Okay. Our number one goal is to amend Virginia's constitution.
So now, the last time I heard about a constitutional amendment, it was to try to prevent me from getting married. So I'm not a big fan of Virginia constitutional amendments. What would yours say?
It would say that no longer shall the General Assembly be the people who draw the lines. That will be delegated to an independent commission. And not only Will we take it away from the General Assembly? We're going to tell that independent commission, these are the criteria that you will use in drawing the lines in the following priority order.
How will the independent commission be chosen? How will we ensure they're independent?
The draft that we have, which is just an opening gambit, mm-hmm. because we're not wedded to a particular proposal on it. The draft that we have has a commission of 7 members. One would be appointed by the Senate Majority Leader, the second by the Senate Minority Leader, the third by the Speaker of the House, the fourth by the Minority Leader of the House. Then there would be 3 independent people, the Executive Director of the Virginia State Bar,
mm-hmm.
and the Inspector General of Virginia, who is typically a career civil servant, and the Auditor of Public Accounts, another typical career civil servant.
Okay, so people who tend to continue in their career regardless of which administration is in power.
Exactly.
I wonder if you'll get the desired result in that you'll have good faith drawing of districts, or if you'll only corrupt those offices and make them become political. The parties would then have an incentive to make sure their person had that office.
They would, and that's why we're not wedded to that particular system. Like I say, it's an opening gambit.
Right.
And if somebody can come up with a better way, we're all for it.
I hear you. All right, so you're going to have this hopefully independent commission that is going to draw districts. What kind of criteria are you suggesting that they be required to consider in drawing those districts?
The first one is respect for pre-existing political subdivision lines, like cities, counties, towns, magisterial districts.
Is the current Salamander district a pre-existing political line?
Oh, no, no.
Not that kind of political line.
No.
All right.
Now, granted, though, some town and city and county lines are a little bit strange.
Yes.
But that's fine. I mean, that's typically because of natural boundaries like rivers or something like that.
Okay.
And they do have a community of interest.
So number one is the existing boundaries of towns, cities, counties. You must sort of try to follow those lines because
they're
already
existing
communities of interest.
That's right.
All right. What else?
Population, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Compactness and contiguity.
Are we trying to achieve, when you say population, are we trying to achieve roughly equivalent populations in these district areas?
Yes. And that's current.
Tell me about that. Why are we doing that?
Redistricting's original purpose was simply to comply with the one person, one vote requirement of the Equal Protection Clause of mm-hmm. the United States Constitution.
Well, so you think it would be fair?
Yes.
That's a notion.
Well, that's the Equal Protection Clause notion.
That
my vote shouldn't be substantially more influential or less influential than your vote.
Now, you were telling me before the show about the rotten boroughs in England.
Yes.
Tell us about the rotten boroughs. I thought that was an interesting story.
Well, England said long ago, every borough, i.e. town, will be able to send 2 people to the House of Commons.
Mm-hmm.
And then they kind of forgot what they had done, and mm-hmm. some of these boroughs went from a reasonable population down to a skeletal population.
They had some ghost towns.
Exactly. And then other towns cropped up and became major cities like Manchester, mm-hmm. Leeds, etc. But they had no representation.
So Manchester, England might have the same number of representatives as Podunky.
Well, in fact, they were worse off because they didn't have any.
Oh, no! How did they not have any?
Because they didn't exist when the reapportionment was done.
Okay, all right. So Podunky set the policy.
That's right.
And so that would be why it wouldn't be appropriate to just say city or county boundaries, because population can vary widely.
Exactly.
All right. So you're trying to get a roughly equivalent population,
yes.
which means you might lump together county districts that are rural might have a lot more land mass than districts that are urban because of population.
That's true.
Okay. So that makes sense. And you want those boundaries to sort of follow existing lines where they can. Are there any other criteria?
Compactness and contiguity.
All right, what's that mean?
Compactness means that you don't have tendrils sticking out like an octopus.
You don't have a district that looks like a starfish?
No.
No.
Contiguity means that they should all be connected to each other and not just at one point. Now,
I don't understand what that means. Work with me on that one. I know what contiguous means as a word, but I'm trying to visualize what you mean in terms of connected to each other and not at one point. I mean, if you divide a map into districts, all the districts are going to be contiguous to some other district. There isn't going to be one that falls through the crack, is there?
But let's take the four corners in the west of the states.
All right.
They meet just at that one point.
Mm-hmm.
We would not say that those states are contiguous because they meet at just that one point.
Okay.
Now, a peculiarity in Virginia is that the legislature here has long said that contiguity by water is just as good as contiguity by land. Hence,
well, except
you have,
nobody lives in the bay.
Well, if fish could vote, it makes sense.
Okay, I'm still not quite sure I understand what's wrong with the four corners issue.
Well, let's take...
I mean, anytime you have... If you divided the country into a grid using, you know, squares like graph paper, places would meet at four corners, and it seems like the very simplest and most compact way to do it. So what's the problem?
Well, where they only meet there. But in the four corners, you have a total border, like the north border of one state and the south border of the other. So they're contiguous.
Uh-huh.
But if they met at just one point, they wouldn't be.
In other words, if there was one of those little starfish tendrils that came out of each one of them and they met at a little point.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Now that makes sense. I get it. All right. Any other criteria?
That they would have to comply with applicable law, like the Voting Rights Act.
What does that mean? Tell me about the Voting Rights Act.
Okay. The Voting Rights Act provides, among other things, that where a recognized minority or ethnic group is sufficient in number to constitute a district, and the other criteria for the district exists, that you must give the members of that group a reasonable opportunity to select the candidate of their choice.
That make that mean something to me in terms of a map.
Okay. The Voting Rights Act singled out certain jurisdictions with a history of discrimination for special coverage.
Mm-hmm.
Virginia was one of them.
Mm-hmm. Probably mostly southern states.
Well, exactly, although Alaska.
Alaska, too, huh?
Yes.
And we have a native population there?
Yes, yep. And for the same reason, portions of Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And the Voting Rights Act says, or has been interpreted as saying, that here in Virginia, where you have districts that are capable of being majority-minority, you must create a majority-minority district, or at least a district that where the minority group can reasonably be expected to elect a candidate of their choice.
I'm still not getting it.
Okay.
I must be very obtuse this morning.
No, I don't think so.
If you've got, you have a population in which you have a minority population, are you saying you should give that minority population a district, lump them together in one district so they can elect a candidate, as opposed to dividing them up into smaller chunks so that they're always a minority?
Exactly.
Okay, I understand. But can't
now, that's
you also...
the way it's been interpreted. That's not my idea.
Right.
That's the Voting Rights Act's original idea.
Can't you also gerrymander by lumping them all together in one district so as to dilute their vote so
Absolutely.
That they only get one candidate?
And that's what various suits claim that Virginia and other states have been doing.
Mm-hmm.
They have made the Voting Rights Act into a Republican weapon.
Fine, you can have one. You can have your candidate. Here, we're going to lump all of you into one pot and give you one candidate who then will be overwhelmed in the general
That's right.
voting.
Now, in fairness, the guys who had to draw the districts in states covered by the Voting Rights Act
mm-hmm.
had a some difficult times ahead of them. It was tough to do. So they came up with, for many years, the notion that, well, we need to have a certain base percentage of that minority group in that district so that they can do it. And generally speaking, it was 55%. Now, in recent times, the Supreme Court has said, no, you don't need 55%.
Yeah, I was going to say, didn't the Voting Rights Act sort of get gutted by a recent Supreme Court decision?
Yes, it did.
Let's talk about that. Tell me about that case and what the decision did to the Voting Rights Act.
The Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act defines the so-called covered jurisdictions that had the discriminatory history.
Right. So it says, hey, you southern states that have a history of Jim Crow and poll taxes and literacy tests and things like that, that you guys are, we don't trust you guys to do this fairly, so we're going to put some certain additional restrictions on you.
That's right.
Okay.
And the big restriction was pre-clearance, that any time they wanted to change any law, municipal, whatever, related to the franchise, they would have to get pre-clearance either from the Justice Department or from a three-judge federal court in D.C.
So basically the law says if you're going to change the rules about voting, like instituting a poll tax or something like that.
Or district lines.
ID, or district lines. You have to get DOJ to say okay to whatever the change is before you can implement it.
Yes.
Okay. And what happened in the Supreme Court case? First of all, do you know what the name of the case is?
I forget it.
I can't remember off the top of my head either. That's embarrassing.
But the decision said, look, this is all based on stuff that happened a million years ago. And there's been a lot of change. You don't find this sort of behavior in the recent past. So we're going to say that the delineation of which jurisdictions are covered is invalid.
Right. And so you can't just say, hey, Mississippi or Alabama or Virginia, because you did this in the past, you have to go through this DOJ approval process, whereas Connecticut, you don't have to.
Correct.
Okay. What's the rest of the Voting Rights Act that still survives, say?
Well, its principal provision is Section 2. And it provides that any sort of action taken with the purpose or with the effect of discriminating in voting against a minority group is unlawful.
Okay. So the heart of it, the theory of it, continues to exist, but one of the enforcement mechanisms has been damaged.
Correct.
I think that case, by the way, my lovely assistant, Olivia August, has handed the lawyer a note saying the name of the case is Shelby County versus Holden, and or Holder, sorry. And yes, that is the name of the case. Thank you, Olivia. The lawyer didn't know that. But now that I read it, I think, oh, yeah, okay. All right. Well, that's something else. So let me ask you this. All the other criteria, other than the Voting Rights Act stuff that you just talked about, to me, seems like objective criteria. Existing county lines, town lines, compactness, contiguity, now that I sort of understand what it means, population, all seems pretty objective. The Voting Rights Act criteria you mentioned, when we were talking about what that means in terms of One Virginia's criteria, you were talking about minorities and the minorities being able to elect a candidate that reflects them. That seems a more complicating factor.
No doubt about it. But we have to comply with applicable law.
Well, yes, you do.
So,
I wonder.
So that was the criterion that we were left with.
I wonder if you were successful, if as a country we were successful in making decent districts over time, if that criteria might become something we didn't need. I don't know. Maybe that's the goal.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Wouldn't it? But it strikes me the most difficult part about applying that criteria is, on the one hand, if you divide up a minority community into 15 different districts, they can't exercise any power. But if you lump them all together in one district, they can exercise only a tiny little bit of power. And I'm not sure, how do you figure out what the right balance there is?
There's no question that there is a tension between the Voting Rights Act on the one hand and ending gerrymandering on the other. Let's look at it from the perspective of a black state senator, for example.
Mm-hmm.
He wants that district to reelect him.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't want it reduced so that it becomes a questionable district.
Right.
So he's going to be arguing one thing.
Well, every incumbent is going to be liking gerrymandering, right? Unless they happen to be on the losing end of something and that is being redone. They're all going to like that. Why? Because they're the ones drawing the districts.
Well, the minority party doesn't draw the districts.
Right.
Except that a minority representative in a minority party has a voice stronger than his white colleagues.
Right. And even if the majority party is drawing the districts, they may draw a few of them to kill a minority candidate here and there. But for the most part, it strikes me that minority candidates tend to be relatively, I don't mean minority as in racial minority, I mean minority party candidates tend to be in a pretty decent place anyway, because they've already been gerrymandered as far as they can go, and those people still have to be permitted to vote. So they're going to marginalize them, but they're going to protect that individual's district in the way that they've done it.
Generally speaking, yes.
So whether you're minority or minority, if you're in office, you want the districts to stay how they are because you want to stay in office.
Not the minority party.
No.
They don't. And all sorts of mischief can occur.
Mm-hmm. Mischief. Tell me about it.
Let me give you an example. For years and years, the Democrats controlled the General Assembly.
Mm-hmm.
Big time.
We did?
That's right.
That is shocking to me. In Virginia.
And they
when was that? Must have been when
I was up until the House of Delegates was, I think, up until 2000.
I lived in Virginia from, I graduated. I lived in Virginia when I was in high school, too, but I graduated college in 93, and I remember my perception at that point being that Virginia was very Republican. I was just wrong about that, huh?
The congressional districts were pretty Republican.
Oh, okay. All right, but the state, the General Assembly was in Democratic hands until 2000. Okay, well, I didn't know that.
And for years and years, they would do mischief to Republicans.
They make sure the Republicans
three incumbents in one district and so on.
Uh-huh.
And so with the 2001 redrawing of the lines, the Republicans controlled it. Now, there were the two best debaters.
Now, how did that happen? How did the
elections?
How did the 2001 redrawing of the lines? Oh, because the Republicans had gotten elected. The Democrats hadn't gerrymandered effectively enough.
Well, changes in population.
Right. Well, they just hadn't done their job well enough. They should have redrawn those districts, but they didn't. So they got kicked out.
Well, a lot of it is based on just on the shifting of where people live. Let me give you an example of that.
Okay.
You know where Humble, Texas is, I'm
No,
sure.
I have no idea where Humble, Texas is. I didn't think Texans were very humble.
East of Houston.
Okay.
Shipyard area. Well, that used to be blue-collar Democratic, and gradually subdivisions were put in. And in 1980, the most amazing thing happened. They threw out a long-term Democratic congressman and elected a conservative Republican.
Because the population changed and who was living there changed. I gotcha.
The line stayed the same, but the people changed.
All right. We're going to have to take a break for just a second here. We'll be back shortly.
You're listening to Straight Talk on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, brought to you by Tucker Griffin Barnes. If you'd like to participate in the program, it's 434-284-9470. And now, back to your host, Andre Hakes.
So we are back. You are listening to Straight Talk on WPVC-FM. My guest today is Terry Cooper of One Virginia, and we are talking about gerrymandering. So you were telling me about Humble, Texas, and what had happened there. Was there a larger point to be made on that, or you were just kind of giving me an example of how that shift happened?
It's just an example of the fact that we're seeing constant shifts in population, and that affects the political makeup of a given district, even though the lines may stay 100% the same.
Okay. So I understand, you know, basically what you're telling me that One Virginia is trying to do seems like a good thing that they're trying to do. I'm a little curious at this point how they're expecting to accomplish it, because as we know, people in power tend to be able to prevent changes from being made that disrupt their power. So how's One Virginia going about this?
Principally through mobilizing public opinion and bringing that to bear on the legislators.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I mentioned our constitutional amendment.
Mm-hmm.
We have a fallback position also, and
All right. That
is legislation, not a constitutional amendment, just a proposed statute.
Now, how do you think you're going to convince the legislators who are in office to slit their own throats?
Well, we're not asking them to slit their own throats.
Okay, I'm listening.
We're asking them for good governance.
Well, I think, unfortunately, the way things have been shifted over time, if we had done that before things got to the point where they are now with all the crazy districts, I think you might have a shot at it. But we are getting
support every day. But let me say, our fallback proposal is not a constitutional amendment.
Mm-hmm.
It does not create an independent commission.
Okay.
It allows the legislature to continue to draw the lines. But
mm-hmm.
it says you will be bound by these same strict criteria that are in the constitutional amendment.
Right. And if that were a really sexy issue, if I thought, man, that's an issue that the press is going to be on like white on rice, I would say, yes, some of them might be shamed into or scared into complying with that issue and saying, yes, I believe in, you know, good government and, you know, doing the right thing here. But I'm thinking it's just not sexy. It's hard to make that sexy enough to make anybody care.
Well, let me make 2 points.
All right.
Number one, our so-called criterion bill, our second best bill,
mm-hmm.
this past session of the General Assembly passed the state Senate by 36-3.
How did that happen?
Good government.
Do you think that the senators were acting in good faith?
Well, we know that some of them voted that way, confident that the House would kill it.
Right. I understand.
But we feel very strongly that we have a clear majority.
Mm-hmm.
The second point.
And what happened in the House?
With respect to the press, let me get the press.
Okay.
Every major newspaper in Virginia has editorialized repeatedly in favor of what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Progress, Richmond Times-Dispatch, Washington Post, Stanton, Waynesboro, Winchester, Roanoke, Lynchburg, Danville, you name it.
I think that's great. I'm just trying to picture voters deciding to go to the polls on this issue and make their decision. In other words, if this representative in the House doesn't support it, I'm not going to vote for them because they mm-hmm. didn't support this anti-gerrymandering bill. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, no, you know, people vote on gays, guns, and God. That's what people vote on, and their money. And they don't vote on things like that. But, you know, it sounds like you're having some success.
We are, but you're right. That's the biggest hurdle we have to face.
Right.
We have got to make it a voting issue. Now, when we show people the maps of these districts,
mm-hmm.
they go bonkers.
Mm-hmm.
When we tell them, and it's true, that these shenanigans are being paid for by you, the taxpayer.
If you can make it about people's wallets, that certainly helps. That certainly helps if you can sort of make that a financial issue.
There are 3 lawsuits that have been filed based on the most recent redrawing of Virginia's lines.
Mm-hmm.
All of which have been billed to the taxpayers. Last time I looked, the cost that had been billed to the taxpayers was about $5.5 million.
Wow.
And it's going up every day.
Can you think of something else we could have done with that $5.5 million?
How about education?
Well, maybe. maybe that'd be nice. Or you
transportation.
Know. How about body cameras for all the jurisdictions for the police? How about food for the people who are hungry, or housing? Or yeah, I'm thinking there's some other things we could have done with that. Then again, litigation is, you know, is how this gets changed, right?
That's one way to change it, but it's not a perfect way at all, because it tends to be a piece here and a piece there, as opposed to a wholesale change.
All right.
You're not going to get a judge to say, here, I'm imposing redistricting criteria on you.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk for a second about what the, you know, we've talked about what gerrymandering is, and we've talked about what, you know, how the voting district drawing process might be done more fairly and objectively. I'm going to ask a stupid question now. What's wrong with gerrymandering? Who cares? Who cares if the district looks nice or if it looks like a salamander?
Well, I don't think the average person cares what the district looks like.
Uh-huh.
But what they do care is the consequences. Uh-huh. And there are many, many very bad consequences that result from gerrymandering. Well, what you get is a lower quality of candidate.
Mm-hmm.
We mentioned that Robert Hurt is retiring, a mm-hmm. local congressman. He was elected as recently as 2010. The last time
I was in his office within about a week.
Last time
we didn't see eye to eye. It was not good.
Uh-huh. There are six members of that class of 2010 who have decided they're not running. They're mm-hmm. fed up. Nothing gets done in Congress. The atmosphere is poisonous. We are losing candidates left and right. Currently, there's a competitive Senate seat in Colorado, mm-hmm. U.S. Senate.
All right.
Republicans couldn't get any of their good candidates to run for because nobody wants that job. So one of the problems is lower quality candidate.
All right.
And that means you get fewer policy wonks who want it.
Mm-hmm.
You get people who are really interested only in beating the minority party over the head.
Right.
And getting their agenda through, whether it's a good agenda or not.
It sounds like, you know, the major polarization we are seeing right now may be traceable to this in some way. When I'm saying polarization, I just mean that, you know, the Congress has been at a standstill often. During the Obama administration, there was a lot of nothing getting done, and a lot of sort of fringe people on the extreme right and people on the extreme left, just sort of beating each other, and nobody moving the ball forward. And so are you saying that that's in part because of how the districts are drawn right now?
Yes, I am.
Tell me a little bit about that. Why is that? Why do the safe districts that are drawn right now by these incumbents mean that nothing gets done?
When you have a safe seat, then by definition, you only have to worry about competition within your own party.
Right.
And that typically comes from the extreme of that party.
Ah.
So in order to insulate yourself from the possibility of that challenge, you have to be as extreme or more extreme than anybody else.
Who was the fairly strong Republican candidate who got ousted in the last major election? There was somebody who ran to the right of him, and I can't remember who it is I'm talking about. Eric Cantor, that's who it was.
Dave Bratt, yes.
That's right. You know, and he was from my perspective, way over here on the left, he was pretty darn conservative. And to sort of watch him get kicked out of office by somebody even further right-wing than him was kind of shocking. I think a lot of people were blown away that happened.
Yes.
But I guess what you're saying is if you draw the districts in a way that they lump together all the very most conservative people and your only threat is from the flank that matches your party, if you're Republican, the threat is from your right flank. If you're Democrat, the threat is from your left flank. Then you're going to get more and more and more and more extreme people winning.
That's right. And when you have a situation like that, compromise becomes an evil word.
Well, surprisingly, those people way, way, way out on the left and those people way, way, way out on the right don't work together very well. It's amazing. Whereas maybe the people who were kind of a little closer to the middle to begin with might have been able to work something out a little better.
Absolutely. And that's the historic truth.
Yeah, I understand.
If you look at the people in Congress who come from relatively competitive districts, mm-hmm. there are some, or in the case of the Senate, much better, competitive states, they tend to be the people who are willing to look and explore the alternatives and see if they can find actual solutions mm-hmm. as opposed to talking points.
Right. I understand. It makes sense. I mean, I've had some conversations before with people who were elected officials talking about that sort of challenge from the left, that sort of challenge from the right, and that was what they were really concerned about. So it makes sense what you're saying to me. I hear you.
I have had the privilege of knowing and working with a number of members of Congress who were really terrific solution seekers, and you don't see many of them around anymore.
Can't get anything done.
That's right. And that's why you have somebody like a Robert Hurt saying, I'm washing my hands of this.
Right. Well, and it's probably what makes people who are more middle of the road behave more toward the extreme, too, is trying to hold on to their seat.
There is a pressure that comes to do that.
That makes sense. Well, let's talk about sort of where the rubber meets the road on this, which is, you know, in people's day-to-day lives. I woke up this morning and I was prepping for this show and looking over the excellent notes that my producer has put together for me. And I got a text from my cousin in Illinois, and she said, are you going to talk about the stuff that's, are you going to do a special show this week and talk about the stuff that's going on? And what she meant was the shootings, the two police shootings of the African-American people and the shooting in Dallas of the five police officers. And I texted her back and I said, no, well, I'm not because I booked, you know, my show's pre-booked. I wish I could talk about that. And then I thought, well, maybe I can talk about that a little bit because it's got a little something to do with what we're talking about here. It's kind of the end result in some ways of what has happened. I watched during the week. I'd heard about these things happening, but I hadn't watched the video. And I sat down after I printed out my notes for our show. I thought, well, I better actually watch these video clips. And I saw the two black men who were shot to death by the police. And I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I mean, and I've seen a lot of things. And then, of course, I didn't see the video, any video from the Dallas event, but I saw some still pictures of a bunch of cops crouched down behind a concrete, you know, retaining wall, like, and I know, you know, five people were killed. Do you think those kinds of events might be in some way related to the non-representation that our current gerrymandered system has produced?
I don't know if I would go that far, but I will say that you have the, in this inability to talk with each other, the same sort of polarization. I'm not saying the same source, but the same sort of polarization that you have in the political world, in large part due to gerrymandering.
Well, the Black Lives Matter people are out there going, hey, you know, the cops are shooting us, and the cops are white, and we're black. And if you look at the composition of Congress, there's probably a disproportionate number of white people in power, and there's certainly a disproportionate number of white people in policing. And I wonder if, you know, the result of that consolidation of power away from the minority, you know, is some of these outbreaks of violence. I think it's related. You think maybe not?
I'm not qualified to answer.
Well, you're qualified to answer. You're as qualified as I am sitting here with a cup of coffee. I mean, you know, I'm hanging out my asphalt shingle here, you know. I'm not a political scientist or anything, you know, it strikes me that, you know, the guy who shot all the police officers, you know, what a terrible way to advance your cause. That's just about the worst thing you could have done. But at the same time, you know, I wonder if it's a desperation move by someone who feels like they have no voice ever. And if and so maybe that's why the Voting Rights Act is important and why it's still important. Maybe that's why when you're listing off your criteria and you're sort of saying, hey, you know, we got to have contiguous and compact and all these other things, you also say, well, we got to comply with the Voting Rights Act. You know, maybe that maybe that's why that exists. Maybe that's why that thing still...
That's certainly a reason why the Voting Rights Act was enacted.
Mm-hmm.
It was enacted, you may recall, in the aftermath of the Edmund Pettus Bridge beatings of black people.
Let's talk about that. Tell the listeners about what that was.
Well, this was the height of the civil rights movement, and Alabama was a focal point,
mm-hmm.
particularly Selma, Alabama, whose police chief had set dogs on protesters.
Mm-hmm.
And on a Sunday, there was a march scheduled across the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, led by Martin Luther King and including John Lewis and a number of others.
Mm-hmm.
And as they started to march, club-wielding police came out with dogs and attacked the marchers.
Mm-hmm.
This was shown on television.
Mm-hmm.
And Everett Dirksen, who at the time was the Republican leader of the U.S. Senate, had been very reluctant to go with the Voting Rights Act up to that point.
Mm-hmm.
And when he saw that, he said, I have no choice. This is just awful.
This cannot happen.
That's right.
So basically, the Voting Rights Act was born out of, to some extent, other things, I'm sure, but out of racial violence.
That's correct.
I mean, that's sort of how we got there. And the Supreme Court gutted a piece of it. I think what they gutted was really one of the enforcement mechanisms of it. But they left the main heart of it still standing if we can make it stick.
They gutted that Section 5 on the basis that the period of time that you were judging these states on was ancient history.
Mm-hmm.
And they left it open for Congress to come up with a formula that wasn't ancient history.
Well,
and Congress has been unable to do that.
It seems like ancient history until you watch the videos of the black men being stopped for their taillight out and being shot to death. Now, then it doesn't sound like such ancient history. But then again, one of those, I think, was in a northern state. So, you know, maybe there is a point to be made there that it might not be just specifically those states. I don't know. It's a very interesting question. I sure would like to see some of that violence end. I'd like to see the police stop shooting people, and I'd like to see people stop shooting police. Both of those things would be good.
Agreed.
I don't know how we get there. You know, it seems like the peaceful protest, you know, the thing that made the peaceful protest powerful in the civil rights movement was the press coverage of it, right? We, you know, the public saw those dogs being loosed on the protesters. They saw people being beaten with billy clubs, and seeing it made it real. And I'll tell you, seeing those two videos this morning of those black men being shot to death by police officers made it very real for me. And it's something, you know, I know this, I'm a defense attorney, but wow. Wow. It was kind of shocking.
If I could make one point.
Yes, sir.
The political polarization that we have today is in part caused by gerrymandering. It's in part caused by other things, too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in part caused by individual hearts and minds. And we all need to look at ourselves and say, am I closed-minded or am I open-minded? And I think we all need to make a point of listening to other voices, not just the echo chambers.
That's right. And that polarization seems to exist in both directions. You know, I've been watching my Facebook feed kind of blow up over this week as these things have happened, and it seems like you have to either be on the side of Black Lives Matter and you must, you know, the police are terrible, or you have to be on the side of, you know, it's a horrible thing to kill police officers, and you can't be on both those sides. And it strikes me that that's, you know, that's what we need. And I think most of us are on both those sides. I think most people would agree that those, you know, those horrible shootings by the police are, you know, those officers need to be condemned for what they did. And I think most people would also agree that mowing down five cops with a sniper rifle is not is a terrible, terrible thing to have happened.
On the subject of most people being on both sides,
yes.
Pew Research did a fascinating series of studies in 2014 about political polarization. And what they found was that the people most polarized were the people who vote in primaries, volunteer in campaigns, write or visit their elected representatives and contribute money to campaigns. These are the people the politicians see.
Right.
They don't see the people who don't do the things like that. So they get the impression from what they see, which is not a representative sample, that everybody is really polarized.
But you know what, though, Terry? I do all of those things. I remember going when Freddie Gray got strangled, there was a march in Charlottesville, and I went, and I remember seeing the police officers lining the route of the march, and they were there, you know, in part to make sure that, you know, people didn't riot or loot, right? But they were also there to protect the marchers. And I know some of those officers. I know them personally, and they're nice, decent people. And the tension between some of the speakers at the end of that march and some of the officers standing there was just really gut-wrenching. It was kind of gut-wrenching to watch, and I don't know how we both recognize the humanity and the sacrifice that those officers are making, and the humanity and the unwilling sacrifice that is being inflicted upon the Black community. But we have got to find a way to recognize both of those things. And I think that even people who vote in primaries and go to talk to their representatives mostly don't support, you know, one side or the other of those things.
There are indeed people like that. But there are a lot of them, and I know many of them personally, who are rigid. And well, you saw them on that march.
Yes, I saw some of them on the march. I saw some of them. I've seen some of them in my Facebook feed this week on both sides. But again, it seems like there is no place to stand, you know, our sort of soundbite culture that is Facebook, and that is the way a lot. I mean, that's how I found out these things had happened, right? I woke up, turned my phone on. There's some posts about it, right? And those posts are soundbites, and they don't allow for a more nuanced view. And they do seem to require people to, you must take this side or you must take that side. And that's, I don't know how we get around that, other than, you know, the liberal lesbian Democrat sitting here with the gun save lives Republican talking on the radio about how we need to draw the districts a little more fairly.
Well, I don't claim that ending gerrymandering is going to cure the common cold.
Well, I think ending gerrymandering might go a long way over a course of years, over decades, to change the factors in our society that lead to these sorts of events.
I agree with you. Let me give you an example of a problem that I believe could be solved through ending gerrymandering. The Zika virus. We've got a bunch of cases right here in the United States, and the expectation is that in Florida and Puerto Rico, the numbers are just going to go huge up. And with great adverse consequences.
Sure.
Congress cannot decide to send money for the Zika, because they keep the certain group keeps insisting on they're going to get Planned Parenthood as a piece of it.
Right. We try to hold our special little issue out there and get it, and it holds things hostage that we could all agree on otherwise.
Yes.
Yeah. Now I hear you. Yep. And both sides are doing that kind of thing.
Yes.
So, based on what you've told me about One Virginia so far, certainly sounds like something that I would support.
Thank you.
I know you'd like to beat me fair and square. I'd like to beat you fair and square, too. So, you know, let's put them up in a friendly and pleasant way with nobody's thumb on the scale. And what would you like to leave listeners with in terms of if they feel similarly that such a thing would be a good outcome? What can they do? How can they get involved with this? What could they do to help this happen?
First, go to onevirginia2021.org on your computer. We have a petition there that we would like you to sign. We'll tell you about our group. We're engaged in a bunch of grassroots activities. As I've indicated earlier, what we're trying to do is mobilize public opinion. That's the only way that we're going to succeed. We do things like, for example, we have a presence at the polls on Election Day in an increasing number of voting precincts around the Commonwealth. We're not there on behalf of any candidate. We're simply passing out information about our issue, ending gerrymandering. We are also getting more and more local governments to pass resolutions that support us. Albemarle and Charlottesville, and I think 10 or 11 others around the Commonwealth have done so already. We are forming regional boards throughout the Commonwealth because we believe that the people most influential with legislators aren't, in the case of, let's say, a legislator in Hanover, somebody in Charlottesville,
right,
but their friends, their neighbors, their colleagues, etc. So we're trying to establish these regional boards throughout Virginia. And check us out to see if we're doing one in your area, or maybe you'd like to help start one.
All right. Well, so what was that website again?
OneVirginia2021.org.
And there you go. If you want to be involved in helping cure this problem of gerrymandering, that's the place to go to start. Well, thank you very much, Terry Cooper. I appreciate your being on the show today.
And thank you very much for having me.
So this is 94.7 WPVC-FM, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, and you have been listening to Straight Talk, a local program dealing with law and social justice issues produced right here in Charlottesville by our very own Olivia August. I'm Andre Hakes, signing off for Straight Talk. Have a great weekend, y'all.
This has been Straight Talk with your host, Andre Hakes, brought to you by Tucker Griffin Barnes. Production is from Olivia August. Engineering, Mike Friend. Be sure and listen again next Saturday morning at 10 o'clock for Straight Talk on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.